KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film, presented by the Northwest Film Center. While cinema provides entertainment and escape, for many filmmakers and viewers, it is a vital portal into the lives of others, a medium of engagement, and a powerful tool for social action. Films will be shown from Thursday, October 6th through Wednesday, November 9th, and include the films Familia, Sing Your Song, An African Election, Windfall, and more. Again, that's Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film, presented by the Northwest Film Center, located at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information about the films can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Community College, where the Southeast Center at 82nd and Division is now a full-fledged campus, allowing students to earn an associate's degree in their own neighborhood. PCC celebrates on October 18th at noon with campus tours, local food vendors, and live Afro-Cuban music by Maleo de Cuba. pcc.edu/celebrate.
May Roberts Station Studio. You're listening to music from Milagro Theater's Oh Romeo. It's an original work created for their Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, celebration. This year, the theme is Shakespeare, and Olga Sanchez, artistic director of Miracle Theater, Milagro Theater, has put together Shakespeare's famous dead characters in a very inventive concept. It's all part of Portland's 400-year anniversary commitment to produce all of Shakespeare's works within 2 years. Oh Romeo is opening on October 16th at Milagro, and we'll hear more about that. And in the second part of the show, Sarah Slipper, artistic director of Northwest Dance Project, tells us about three new works they're debuting, including one by Portland's Min Tran on October 23rd through the 25th at Lincoln Performance Hall. Stay with us. This is Stage in Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. With me in the studio is artistic director Olga Sanchez of Miracle Theater. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Dime.
I think you're my favorite guest.
No.
I think so. I think so.
But you know, I love talking to you.
That was beautiful music.
Thanks. Yeah, it's an interesting piece. It's called A la Nanita Nana, and it's basically about the nana, the grandma or the caretaker of the baby who's rocking the baby to sleep.
It does sound like a lullaby.
It's a lullaby. It's exactly what it is. But it's a lullaby about a lullaby. It's in some countries, I found out, a Christmas song, which I didn't know before we selected it for the show.
I think that could work.
Yeah. It's a holiday show.
It's beautiful, beautiful music and song. So I just wonder, what would October be here in Portland without you guys doing the Day of the Dead celebration?
Rainy,
like it is today. But you know, it really helps.
I think the thing that Dia de Muertos and our show and our altar exhibit and our dedication to the holiday is it brings the color out.
It does. It's a very colorful celebration.
And life, absolutely.
Very much so. Do you think that mainstream Portland and certainly mainstream theater goers knew much about Dia de los Muertos before Miracle started doing these shows?
I don't know. I can't imagine. This is our 20th anniversary of the Dia de Muertos festival. It's had different incarnations over the years. It started as a festival. It had readings. It had always had altars. It had play readings. It had music and dance always. But I would imagine, and I've only been with the Milagro now for 12 years, but I think that we've been part of the growing awareness, certainly, of the Dia de Muertos in our region.
I don't know if I've asked you this before, but how did you and your family celebrate?
I am not of Mexican heritage.
Aha.
So we were very Catholic.
So this is new to you, too.
Well, when I moved from New York to, I'm Colombian, my heritage is Colombian, and I moved to Seattle. And there, and I had encountered Dia de Muertos before because I'd traveled to Mexico and I'd seen, but I didn't know too much about it. And when I was in Seattle, I really became aware of Mexican heritage, Chicano culture, that I hadn't come into contact with in New York. In New York, I knew, well, certainly Colombian culture, I knew Puerto Rican, Cuban. Those were kind of the big three for me, my cultural experiences as a Latina there. I moved to Seattle and suddenly the majority of the Latino experience was of Mexican heritage. And so I quickly learned and fell in love with Dia de Muertos the more I studied it and celebrated. I wrote a play when I was in Seattle that got produced in various places. I created various festivals while I was living there. I embraced the culture, the holiday, the sentiment behind it immediately and predominantly because I really felt it approached death, approached mortality in a completely different way than I had been accustomed to, and that I saw the mainstream culture approached it. It really said, death is not the end. Death can be, death is a part of life. Fundamentally, it embraced death as part of life, as part of the experience, not something to fear, but something that had to be reckoned with. And as soon as I started thinking about my own mortality, it transformed the way I lived. Suddenly, values came into sharp focus. What was important? What was important for me to accomplish or spend my time on? If my time is going to be limited, then what's important here? And I felt that, I felt that was a good exercise, and one that, if we don't, one that I think would be useful for our society.
Well, certainly respect for our ancestors and visiting graves on particular days of remembrance are important in all cultures. But there's something about the celebratory nature of this, the element of it, which is quite joyous. And that's not necessarily the case in most cultures.
No,
it's more of sadness and remembrance and looking back. But this one is so different
fundamentally is what we're doing is we're laughing at death. We're saying that death really doesn't end a relationship. And how many of us have dead ones who we have still conversations with, who we think about and who guide us in subtle and maybe not so subtle ways, but who really have influenced us and whose, I feel my relationship, for example, with my grandmother continues on. I'm not in constant contact with her, but I feel like what she's taught me and what comes back to me. And I think it's that coming back to me that is also the maintaining of her spirit, keeping it alive.
I think so. I mean, certainly we can all relate to that.
And that's joyful. Yes. That means that we haven't lost the person.
Because she's still alive.
She's still alive.
Through
still,
your memories of
exactly,
her.
Exactly, and in my heart. And that that's where the joy comes from.
Right.
Because
it's basically a
focus. Do we focus on, oh, they're gone, or do we focus on, oh, they were with me in one capacity, in one way, and now they're with me in another. How wonderful is that, that this person is with me?
And the impact of that person.
Right.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts talking with Olga Sanchez, the artistic director of Miracle Theater, and the director of a new original work, O Romeo, which runs October 16th through November 9th at Milagro Theater in Southeast Portland. Now, you have set this with Shakespeare's characters in the Land of the Dead.
Yeah.
And so where did that idea come from?
Well, they're all dead.
They're all dead, so that was the idea.
The idea...
Because
there's
a plethora of dead characters in Shakespeare.
Well, a couple of thoughts at play here. I was in conversation with Erica Turpening and Caitlin Fisher of the Complete Works Project, this magnificent celebration of Shakespeare's oeuvre, of his works, over the current 2 years, between 2014 and 2016, celebrating 450 years since his birth and 400 since his death. And they said, hey, would the Milagro like to participate? And I said, hey, we focus on Latino playwrights. Sorry. But we talked about it some more and realized that as much as I love Shakespeare, but it's just not.
Yeah, how do you make that work?
How do we make that work? And realized that Dia de Muertos, which is one of our devised shows, we have several new works that come out every year, but this was the place where we could actually investigate, do this investigation of Shakespeare and Día de Muertos, which is, you know, I like to call it Shakespeare meets Day of the Dead.
Well, that's what I think I said, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's your quick pitch, right?
You know. And,
elevator
and,
pitch.
And so Shakespeare is in the show. And Shakespeare, and to me it made sense that Shakespeare was dying. Shakespeare's on his deathbed. And I was thinking about, again, my grandmother. What happened to her and what I've heard has happened to other folks is that they start seeing family that have passed on as on their deathbed. They're lying there, they're very sick, and they suddenly start talking to their mother or their aunt or their friends, people who've already crossed over. And it's very real to the person who's lying in the bed. The rest of us sitting around the bed are going, oh, there's nobody in the room. But obviously she sees them. And for me, to me, that's a comforting thing that happens. Real or not real, I'm not going to question it. It's whatever is happening there. If it's real, then what you have is people opening their arms on the other side, spirits, let's say, welcoming the and telling the person who's on their deathbed, it's going to be okay. Come on over. It's going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And that's a beautiful thought. And so I envisioned Shakespeare lying on his deathbed, and suddenly these characters are coming over from the other side, and they're going, it's okay, Will, let it go. Come on over.
Come on
It'll be
over.
Fine. And that's where the idea started. Now, I basically what happens, of course, is that he's looking at his characters going, this is not real. He doesn't have a framework for this, so he just thinks he's going mad. But we created a character called Rivka, his housekeeper. Rivka, the story behind Rivka, she's a Jewish woman from Spain who left because, they were booting out the Jews out of Spain. So she went north, and her brother goes to the New World. And her brother, Tubal, writes her letters telling her about these things that he's encountering in the New World, these new traditions, the indigenous traditions. And so she's sharing all this stuff about, wow, in essence, the traditions of the Aztec.
Which is where Day of the Dead
exactly,
came from.
Exactly. And what we've sort of created is that Shakespeare writes a play in which the Spanish and the Aztec come together and create this different kind of celebration.
Wow.
Because there's a love story, of course.
Well, of course. I mean, you've got, all these famous characters, Lady M, Hamlet, Romeo,
yeah,
Ophelia. But you have Titania, and I didn't think that she died.
No, and that was we had many wonderful conversations around the table about where does Titania fit into all of this, because she doesn't die, but she's
maybe she
a
dies
powerful
later.
Spirit.
Yeah.
Well, she's a fairy.
There you
so
go.
So would she ever die?
That's
she belongs to a completely different realm.
There you go.
And we have Yorick, who we never even met as a person, only a skull in his play.
Alas, poor Yorick's
exactly.
in there.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, the thing for me was, I knew that we were going to be presenting this work for a very broad audience, an audience some of whom would know nothing about Day of the Dead, as always, some of whom would know everything about Día de Muertos, some of whom would know little about Shakespeare except the name and perhaps a few characters, and some who would be Shakespeare files, shall we say. And so what I endeavored to do was select characters that were archetypes, villains, counselors, the young man, the crazy girl, the love interests, and a fairy. And I just felt we needed to have that element. And
yeah,
and the actors have just embraced these characters, and they're going with it. And so all of these characters, they're representative, so that you also didn't need to know the plays in order to understand these characters, because they're so distinct. So you understand what a villain is. You understand what a lover is. You understand what a scholar is. You understand what the young girl who's having troubles is. You don't need to know Ophelia's backstory to understand
right,
that
right.
she's got some troubles.
So you have Shakespeare in, like, Shakespeare monologues and
we
have
yes we and again
and
it was finding the balance.
Yeah,
we have excerpts.
Yeah.
We have Shakespeare lines dotted, not all characters speak their own lines, although many do. A lot, you know, this emerged out of improv.
Awesome.
Some research in advance. I had speeches, you know, that we of course went, okay, we can't use that whole thing. And of course, some of it's translated. We've got a couple of different languages represented.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's bilingual too. So there we go. You got everything. Oh, Romeo, a bilingual world premiere for the Day of the Dead celebration, conceived and directed by Olga Sanchez, opens October 16th and runs through November 9th at Milagro Theater. That's located at 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. And I have all that info, including pics and links, at stageandstudio.org. In the time remaining, we probably can only do one shout out, and maybe we'll go with the January one with the wonderful Laken Valdez, who's coming back.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Right,
Laken Valdez, who is...
Laken, thank you.
He's a protege, of his dad, Luis Valdez, the grandfather of Chicano theater and El Teatro Campesino. And last year he did our Dia de Muertos show. It was called Corrido Calavera. Very fun show.
That was
really fun show, yeah. And so he's coming back. He's doing some research in the field. He's been having interviews with various Chicano leaders of the Movimiento. And the play is called Searching for Aztlan.
Mm-hmm.
Aztlan is the land where the Aztecs came from, I guess you could say. It's the mythical, because we don't know, have an actual, you know, map of it, but it's the land to the north, which some have said includes Oregon, from where the people migrated south and then discovered and then landed, you know, as told by prophecy, they were going to find an eagle with a snake in its mouth perched on a cactus, and that's where they were going to settle. And that is, and that's the image that is in the center of the crest in the middle of the Mexican flag.
Wow.
And it is the heart of Tenochtitlan, or what became Mexico City. And so Aztlan has been the mythical birthplace, or I wouldn't say mythical, it's the wrong word, but the legendary birthplace of the people that became the Mexica, or the Aztecs, the Mexican. Aztlan, because it was basically the United States, it was California, Oregon, all these territories. You look back to the history of Spain and the United States, and as we know, all of this territory was formerly Spain and or Mexico, this western coast of the United States.
Right, right.
And then we had the Treaty of Guadalupe in the mid-19th century, and suddenly, as people say, the border, they didn't cross the border.
No,
the border
changed.
Crossed them,
yes.
Exactly. And so suddenly you had people of Mexican heritage now in the United States. And what happened was that history, you know, obviously over the years, this history is forgotten, but in the 1960s, as part of the United Farm Workers' struggles for better working and respect for the farm workers, suddenly this history started coming up, in the notion that, wait a minute, we are the original people here, or at least some of the original people here, and we deserve respect. We're not just people that have come up here and are making problems for you. We're from here. And this notion of Aztlan was very empowering to the students in particular, the university students who formed Mecha groups, the Movimiento Estudiantil Chicano Aztlan. And I think I've gotten that wrong, forgive me, but along those lines. And so this story is about this young woman who's reviewing all of this history. It goes way back, and she's trying to find her place in it as a modern Chicana, trying to figure out where does identity live as somebody who still knows that there's a fight to be won.
Well, Searching for Aztlan is in January, and so we'll look out for that. Meanwhile, O Romeo opens October 16th through November 9th. Olga Sanchez, always delightful to talk to you, our resident scholar here.
Oh, you're so kind. Sorry, Dina.
Have a great opening for O Romeo.
Thank you so much.
So
I hope
good
to
talk
go
with you.
Always.
I definitely. It's my
beautiful
Halloween treat.
Yay.
There. Next up, we have Sarah Slipper at Northwest Dance Project after this music.
Thank you.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. Joining us right now is Sarah Slipper, the artistic director of Northwest Dance Project. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Dee Mae. How are you?
Good to talk with you. It's been a while.
It has. It's a pleasure. Yeah.
Oh, I remember when you were starting your company, and you are now in your 10th year. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but yeah. It has been. It's been a decade, Sarah. I can't believe it. So how has the company grown since then? I mean, by leaps and bounds, I'm sure. No pun intended.
Yeah, that's actually a great thing to say. Well, we celebrated our 10th season last year, so we're actually entering our 11th.
Oh, wow. And, wow, yeah.
There's been lots of excitement going on. The company has been, as you know, has really sort of become solidified on the cultural landscape, both in Portland but also nationally and internationally. The company's been touring a lot more, and we were we were a part of the Cultural Olympiad at the Olympics in London. And
I did not.
Canada.
Yes, I remember reading about that, actually. That must have been incredible.
It was incredible. It was also fantastic to go back to Canada for the first time last year. For me, I'm still Canadian.
Are
so
you?
It was kind of like almost nostalgic because I went to where my whole former hometown, and we went to a lot of places that either I grew up in, had performed in, trained in centers, in the city. So that was exciting. The company is traveling to Germany this year and back down to California. So the company itself is traveling a lot more. And there's also been a lot of excitement because we're going into a new home. And we just announced it.
A new building, yes.
A new building.
Yes.
So,
that is the biggest accomplishment for any artistic company, I think, is to have your own space like that. And it certainly gives you a lot of, I mean, that's a real milestone. It really is.
It's a huge milestone for us. I mean, the first milestone was getting our first home. And we never expected to outgrow it so fast.
Wow.
And that happened. And we realized that we needed, dance needs space, but it wasn't just space for the dancers. It was space we've grown, with some of our artistic staff, but also space, like logistical space, like the dancers had been, our company member, professional company members had been changing on a stairwell, and we needed them to have a space where they, a space for themselves and the things like basics, like a shower. we really realized that this, that they're world class on stage, and there they are behind the scenes dressing on a stairwell. So there are some things that like that we're going to have proper dressing rooms and an entryway lobby, which you realize, the movement of people, and also very fortunate that we're going to get to have two studios, one for the company, but also one for our growing adult and youth classes.
Well, congratulations on that. That is a big deal, and I'm very happy for you.
Huge.
I want to talk about your new, your opening show right now. It's going to be opening soon. It's called New Now Wow.
New.
What's up with
now.
That title?
Wow. Well, it's the title is trying to express what's going on the stage, and we're doing three world premieres. This is extraordinary, and that program is built around the excitement of having three new works on stage. And I think the now part is some of the most rising stars on the dance world, on the scene. Part of it is what we drive behind this program is we try to seek out these rising voices in dance.
Well, one of them has
kind of the current.
One of them has been around for a long time, Min Tran, our Portland's own Min Tran. And certainly, he's an incredible choreographer, and he's doing one of the pieces of the world premiere. And then who are the two other artists that you have? One from the Czech Republic and another from New York by way of China?
Yeah, it's kind of an international roster, as you could, even with Min Tran, our local luminary. Giri Porcarney has danced in Europe with one of the the most world-renowned company's Netherlands Dance Theater. He is from Czech Republic, and he's also danced with Crystal Pipe of Kid Pivot. And so his extraordinary, he's very young in the sense that he's just transitioning from being a professional dancer to a choreographer, having a choreographic career. And I was really struck by his in his new voice. You can already capture that. You can see it. And Ying Yue is based in New York. She is Chinese born. And she won our Pretty Creatives International Choreographic Competition.
Yeah, I saw that. That's
year.
Incredible. That's great.
And so one of the things that we do is we want to mentor that. Like, she came and worked and had to sort of just throw out in one week, this material with our launch project. And you could see the spark. You can see the talent. And I wanted to mentor that and carry that on with the company. She created in our Summer Splendor show, kind of in the intimate space. And now we want to take that to the next level and have her work seen on the full stage with all the support systems, the incredible lighting designer, Jeffrey Forbes, costume design, so that you get the full circle of help creating, and developing their voices. And that's part of what we love to do. I love to mentor choreographic voices, and she's really that's the full story for her. And so we've got three world premieres,
and this is the third. And this is the third for men with your company too, isn't it?
Yeah. We love men. We like to search for voices around the world, but I think also there's so much talent.
A huge dance community here. Yeah. The world premiere of three dance pieces, including one from Mintron, is happening Thursday, Friday, Saturday, October 23rd through the 25th at 7:30 p.m. at Lincoln Performance Hall. That's located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. For more info and tickets, visit nwdanceproject.org or call 503-828-8285. That's 828-8285. And I have all of that info at stageandstudio.org. Sarah Slipper, Artistic Director of Northwest Dance Project, great talking with you again. And I'm so happy that, for your new space and your new building and achieving this milestone in your dance company.
Thank you so much, Demi. It was such an honor and a pleasure always to chat with you.
Well, thank you and take care.
All right.
That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. Now, I'll have all of this show online later today at stageandstudio.org, also at kbu.fm/stageandstudio, as well as the podcast on iTunes. And you can also like us on facebook.com/stage_n, or tweet me at @stage_n. You can always send me your events and updates at any of the devices. Any of the info I just gave you, so please do. Till next time, I'm Demay Roberts.
Stay tuned for Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Community College, where the Southeast Center at 82nd and Division is now a full-fledged campus, allowing students to earn an associate's degree in their own neighborhood. PCC celebrates on October 18th at noon with campus tours, local food vendors, and live Afro-Cuban music by Maleo de Cuba. pcc.edu/celebrate.
I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream, and him on my wall.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Mary Weaver Chapin. She's the curator of graphic arts at the Portland Art Museum, and she's curated a show called This Is War, Graphic Arts from the Great War. Welcome to KBOO, Mary.
Thank you, Joseph. Glad to be here.
The Great War is World War I, which took place mostly in Northern Europe. Just tell us a little bit about what was going on at that time, why so many pictures appeared.
Well, the Great War, as you say, started in August of 1914, and it was our first World War. We know it better today as World War I, but it was our first truly global conflict. There were eventually 30 countries drawn into this huge conflagration that took place mostly on the Western Front, but also in places far away as Russia, Africa, the Middle East. It was truly a worldwide event. So the artists at the time responded to this with unusual vigor, and I'm hoping this exhibition will show people the wide range of artistic responses. We have artists from